This episode is sponsored by our friends at YCharts. With YCharts, each output is a powerful visual that brings your analysis to life and intuitively explains the why behind your strategy. Go beyond a simple price chart and educate clients about the levers that truly impact performance or risk, and emphasize your most important insights with tailored proposal reports designed with custom talking points, compliance-approved messaging, and seamless personalization options for importing marketing collateral and firm branding. Click the link in the show notes to start your free YCharts trial and see how YCharts is a one-stop shop for screening, scenario building, streamlined proposal generation, and beyond, helping you make an impact and grow AUM with fewer hours spent on investment management. See the link in the show notes. All right. Hello, and welcome to the Yet Another Value Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Walker. If you like this podcast, it would mean a lot if you could rate, subscribe, review wherever you're watching or listening to it. With me today, I'm happy to have on as my guest, myself. I'll explain that in a second. If you're a regular listener, you know that's how I normally started and intro the guest. But before I get there, just a quick disclaimer. Nothing on this podcast is investing advice. That's always true, but particularly true today, because as I always tell everyone, man, I sometimes just wonder if I've been doing this a while, and you know, everybody's got imposter syndrome, and all the time I'm like, do I have any clue what I'm doing? Like, maybe I should just, like, am I just a monkey throwing darts at a billboard? I don't know what I'm doing, but please consult a financial advisor, all that jazz. This isn't investing advice. Anyway, what am I doing here? Look, at the beginning of the year, I always put up a little, you know, the state of the Yet Another Value blog and podcast. I consider my Yet Another Value empire. I always put up a review of my empire and kind of my plans. And one of the things I said is, hey, look, I love the podcast. It's one of I'm so glad I do it. It's one of my favorite things I do. I know it's different. And, you know, there aren't a lot of other people hosting finance podcasts, especially niche finance podcasts, but I really enjoy it. I find it really energizing. And I said, I want to experiment with different formats. So yesterday, I was on a run, and sometimes when I run, I listen to podcasts, and sometimes when I run, I listen to music. I was listening to music. I was thinking about a bunch of stuff. I said, hey, you know, why don't you just pop on a podcast for 30 or 45 minutes and just talk about what's on your mind? Because the podcast, you're generally interviewing other people. You generally put your thoughts on the blog and your weekend thoughts. Why don't you try a blend? So I'm going to try a blend, do this podcast. I'll do it once, twice, three times, probably like once a month, where I just say some things that are on my mind. If you love it, let me know in the comments and maybe we'll keep it going. Assuming I think, you know, it's kind of worth the time. People are enjoying it. If you hate it, I'd say, please don't let me know. But I found people are much more likely to let me know they hate things in the comments than they love them. So if you hate it, I'm sure it will find its way to me. Anyway, the way I'm going to do this is I've got some things on my mind. I've got four or five topics today. I'm just going to rant on them for 5 minutes each. So my topics, just to let you know up front, are some thoughts on conferences and seeing people in person, some thoughts on controlling shareholders and what they're telling us about, maybe not the market overall, but some situations, a possible bottom in telecom, some thoughts on energy drinks, and a bonus question on advertising as a short signal and when companies include their ticker in their advertisements. So I'll get to all those. Let's start. The first thing is I am taping this. It is Sunday, May 5th. I just got back from a travel to a conference. No, it wasn't Omaha for Berkshire's annual meeting, which was yesterday. I went to see my friend and the editor of this podcast, Bobby Marks. He hosts the Planet Microcap conference. I went in Vegas. I have to tell you, I had an absolute blast. I love Vegas. I saw several investors who I really like. I spent a ton of time, and I just found it really energizing to be at a conference, seeing people in person. You know, I talk to lots of people on the phone, on the podcast, and that's energizing, but there's something particularly different about just like seeing people in person and hanging out with them. You know, I don't think this will, I don't think he'll get mad at me for saying this. I spent a ton of time with my friend and one of the podcast's most popular guests, Artem Fokin. We grabbed coffee, we grabbed dinner. It was just a lot of fun. So I guess the two things on conferences. First, if Bobby's going to have me, I'll be back at Planet Microcap next year. There were 20, 30 like-minded, small cap focused value investors there. I'd love to turn it into 80, 90, 100. And if Bob, maybe next year I'll start like hosting separate tracks or something. But if you're interested in meeting up in person, that could be fun next year. Just throwing that out. Also, I love being in Vegas for 48, 72 hours. After that, my cholesterol gets up and my heart kind of stops. The second thing is you know, I've always had in the back of my mind, maybe I should do a yet another value podcast conference. And I don't know what that would look like. You know, would I have some of it advertised on YouTube? Because obviously the YouTube channel, there's, you know, I'd have to rent out a stadium if everybody who listened was, came. Should we, you know, invite 30 people and 30 investors and keep it between us, but have some of it on YouTube, keep it all in person? How would you structure it? You know, in my mind, I think it would be like 30 investors. Everybody gets up and does a stock pitch for 10 minutes. Maybe we put that on the internet. Maybe we keep it private, but it would mainly be us just like, you know, getting together, networking. We'll probably do escape rooms. Anyone who knows me knows I actually proposed to my wife through an escape room. I love escape rooms. I don't know if everybody's ready for how seriously I would take an escape room if we did it, because I think I've probably done 250 and I've gotten out of 248. So if we didn't get out, we would, you know, the world would be down four or five investors, because anyone who was in that room with me might not be exiting. But anyway, it'd be a lot of networking and stuff. So if you've got thoughts on the right way to do a conference or something interesting like that, I'd certainly be interested in that. You know, I've talked to Bill Brewster before about doing a podcast, conference with him. Maybe I'd have to loop him in. Yeah, so if you've got thoughts on that, I'm all ears. Feel free to loop them over. And it's not lost on me that I just mentioned Artem Fokin and Bill Brewster, who claim they listen to the podcast. So, you know, maybe I'll see if they hit me up and say, oh, yeah, I heard the mention. Okay. Anyway, second topic, control shareholders. You know, I did a recent podcast on Target Hospitality. The ticker there is TH. I can include a link in the show notes if you didn't see it. I thought it was a ton of fun. I was kind of losing my voice, but I was super excited to do that. But I cannot remember seeing as many majority shareholder deals as I've seen in the past, call it 8 weeks. And a majority shareholder deal is Target Hospitality, right? Somebody owns 60% and they say, hey, I'd like to buy the rest of the company for, you know, the stock's at 10, I'd like to buy it for 12. Or I consider, like, you know, if somebody owns 35% of a company and they try to take it private, I basically consider that a majority deal too, because 35% is a lot. You effectively control the company. I can't remember seeing as many of these deals as I'm seeing right now. You know, Target Hospitality, I listed just this week, Wide Open West, the ticker there is WOW, got a bid. Late last year, Goldman Sachs took HRT private. There's just a bunch of these out there, and I'm not going to list them all, but I think right now there's between 8 to 12, and I can't remember seeing this many out there before. And I don't use this as a sign that, you know, I would be interested, because I do think there were lots of take private deals happening in like 2006, 2007 when markets were wide open. And obviously that wasn't a great sign for the stock market. But I don't think this is a stock market sign, but I do think this is a sign that things that are a little more illiquid, maybe with, you know, something that has a 35 or 50% owner is going to be more illiquid because half the stock's taken up. I think things that are a little more liquid, maybe a little more cyclical, which most of these businesses have a little bit of cyclicality or hair, or maybe some unique risk. You know, Target Hospitality has the government risk. I think that a lot of these companies are trading cheaply. And, you know, if you think of a majority shareholder, generally they're a majority shareholder because they want to reduce their shareholdings over time, right? It's a private equity firm that owned 100%. They IPO to go down to 70. And over a series of maybe five offerings over the next 3 years, they're going to go from 70 to 60 to 40 to 30 to 15 to zero, right? So generally a majority shareholder wants to go down. And I wonder if it's almost the old, okay, you're forcing my hand, right? The majority shareholders are sitting there. The stocks are super cheap. Maybe there a lot of these are buying back stock, but because they own 50%, there's not a ton of liquidity there. So they're saying, hey, debt markets are wide open. These are trading for a fraction of their private market value. If the stock market's never going to give these a multiple, maybe we do this. And then, you know, 2 years from now, we'll re-IPO it, or we'll sell it to strategic, or we'll sell it to another PE. So I'm not using that as something where I'm saying, hey, there are eight take privates now, the market on a whole is cheap, or hey, 2 months from now, there are zero take privates, the market's flatly overvalued. Neither of those. I just think it's interesting. And, you know, I do think debt markets are really wide open. And while the stock market's been decently strong over the past 18 months, I think there's a really big discrepancy between public and private market values, particularly in more illiquid stocks. So just something I'm thinking of. Speaking of, I mentioned Wide Open West in the ticker there's WOW. I mentioned that in control shareholders. They got a bid last week from their control shareholder plus Digital Bridge. I'm a huge bag holder in cable stocks. I mean, the worst investments I've made over the past 2 years have been, I love cable stocks. I've always loved the story. I think that if you I've loved the stories, and I've just gotten killed on all of them, and it's been the real differentiator in just absolutely outstanding results and whatever. I do wonder if in the past month we've kind of seen the bottom of telecom, and I mean that in a few ways. Look, WOW just got a bid from their controlling shareholder in Digital Bridge. You get a bid because your stock's really cheap, right? If you look at T-Mobile, which is a big telecom player, obviously, they've started buying and taking off little small fiber deals. They're not giving tons of disclosure around them, but I think if you look at the implied price that they're taking fiber deals and all these telecom deals out at, it would make a public market shareholder blush in terms of the multiple that they're giving. And, you know, the WOW offer and the T-Mobile deal comes on the heels of Consolidated got taken out by their majority shareholder late last year / early this year. So a lot of these assets are trading well below replacement value. You know, Cable One, who I had their CEO on the podcast, I've got their stock trading at about $2,000 per home passed. And if you think about a fiber build out, which there's still plenty of interest in doing, a fiber build out generally takes about $1,000 per home passed to upgrade copper to fiber. So, you know, there's $1,000 there. It takes several years to get that upgrade in. Once you get the upgrade in, you have to go spend another about $500 per subscriber to connect them to the fiber network. You've got to do advertising. You've got to do, there's the time value of money and all this sort of thing. So I think for a lot of these cable and telecom players with assets in the ground right now, they're trading well below their replacement value, what it would cost to go. And, you know, if you think about greenfielding fiber, what it would cost, they're trading below replacement value. They still gush cash flow. Yes, the near term has been a lot rockier than anyone 2 years ago thought. Fixed wireless has taken a lot more share than all but the most bullish telecom people can looked at. But, you know, these stocks are really cheap. They're absolutely hated. And it's not lost on me that you're starting to see lots of private market money come in at multiples that, again, I think would make public market multiples. If you told me, hey, my target price for Frontier is this price, and I base that on the T-Mobile deal, you know, people would think you were absolutely insane based on how high the price would be. So I do wonder if they're bottoming there. Let's see. Oh, last thoughts. Energy drinks. So if you watch the podcast on YouTube, I'm holding up a Celsius right now. An embarrassing confession of mine, you'll notice I'm drinking energy drinks a decent bit. Embarrassing confession of mine, I absolutely freaking love energy drinks, and I understand there's a little bit of a stigma associated with them. I'm only drinking sugar-free, it's okay, but I love them. I've got some NoCos at the table. My wife always asks me to quit, but I love them. So anyway, I've got a post, I might do this at some point, but you know, if I told you, hey, what's the biggest stock winners of the past 20 to 30 years? Number one, maybe not actually number one, but maybe actually number one, I know it was for a while, was Monster Energy Drink. But actually, what's the biggest stock winner of the last 10 years? Maybe not actually number one, but close, would be Celsius, the energy drink, which I'm literally drinking right now. You know, it's not lost on me that two of the biggest winners are in the energy drink space, and like literally shame on me because, as I just said, I'm a huge energy drink fan and I missed both of them. Monster, because when I started public market investing, the stock had really run and I just didn't realize how far it could go. And Celsius, back in 2018, there were some, let's call them yellow flags, but they were very yellow in the accounting. But you know, at some point it's, hey, do you like accounting or do you like making money? And I think in 2018, I specifically remember I went to a workout class and there were four people in the class, including the instructor, who were all drinking Celsius energy drinks. And I was like, oh, this seems to have legs. So I mean, I guess where I'm trying to go is, what is it about energy drinks that has created such big winners, right? Like Monster, I could understand. It's at the forefront of a brand new trend. It's got this great brand, but Celsius is kind of hard to believe how well they've done, right? Like there's plenty of competition in the energy drink space right now. Everybody's going for it. I don't understand how Celsius has won so big. And I'm just really interested in exploring, like, there's some categories that it seems keep producing winners, energy drinks being one of them. There's some very small energy drink players out there right now that I think could be interesting. I probably need to spend more because, again, they should be in my wheelhouse. And you miss Monster, shame on you. Then you miss Celsius, it's approaching shame on me. And if you missed the third one, I'd kind of be like, hey, you know, what's going on? But anyway, it just, there's something interesting about the energy drink market. You know, with soft drinks, you really only saw Coke and Pepsi be winners. And Diet Dr. Pepper, Snapple, if you got in the stock at the right time, you could do well on and off. But, you know, that was it. And energy drinks, they appear to be able to leverage other people's distribution. I'm really interested in why we keep seeing big winners there. Okay, last thing I wanted to mention. I saw a tweet on this. I can't remember who said it, but I'm sorry for not giving you your hat tip. But somebody said, hey, when I see a company that advertises their stock, you know, they put their ticker. Oh, my wife's here. I'm going to pause it and then I'll finish this thought in 1 second. All right. Look, sorry, my wife was walking in with the kiddo. There's the nice thing about doing a solo podcast. You can pause and press record whenever you want to and not have to worry about the guest time or an awkward pause or anything. Anyway, the last thing I wanted to talk about was companies that advertise their ticker. You know, if you... Sometimes I watch like no CNBC. I'm a cord cutter. I don't watch any CNBC, but I do remember sometimes you'd see an advertisement and, you know, there'd be an advertisement for a company and then the next one would be an advertisement. And at the end, it would say, you know, like Exxon traded on the NYSE under XOM or something. And, it, you know, sometimes you'll go on CNBC. I always almost screenshot it when I see it. You know, it'll just be a company. They're not even advertising their product. They're advertising their ticker. And a lot of times, you know, it's the smaller companies with a lot more hair on them than you'd expect. But sometimes I see like decently big companies advertising, like with real businesses advertising their tickers. And what I'm trying to, you know, if you're advertising your ticker, you're no longer your company, your product is not your, you don't have a product. You're really advertising your product as your stock. And I just wonder, A, is there a short signal there in terms of companies that advertise their stock? I would have to imagine the answer is yes, but I don't know. I'd love to see some academic research or if anybody's done anything. And, you know, maybe it's the company where, you know, it's there's a bunch of things about, hey, we're ExxonMobil. And I'm just using ExxonMobil as an example. I don't even think they do their ticker. But if it's we're ExxonMobil, come to our gas stations, everything. And then the last thing is ExxonMobil, here for humanity, ticker XOM. Maybe that's benign. But then when you see the company that says XOM traded NYSE, look at our stock, look at our company, all this sort of stuff, maybe that's a short signal. I don't know. Maybe TV isn't a short signal, but when you see someone advertising on like the top of CNBC.com or when you see somebody advertising on Twitter, Twitter, oh my God, I can't tell you how many, you know, $50-100 million companies I'd see that were just advertising their stock. But anyway, I just wonder if there's some short signal or if there's something around companies. There are some companies who their product is their stock, right? And I wonder if there's some academic studies or anything that delineate how you can like separate these things out. My gut is all these companies are massive underperformers, but my gut is also, hey, these companies are very small, very difficult to borrow. You know, people should remember nothing on this podcast investing advice. Shorting is risky, very risky, but shorting really small companies is really, really risky. So I wonder, maybe there's some alpha there, but it's kind of impossible to capture just because of high borrow, risks of squeeze and everything. But I am always interested in those. And so anyway, this was the five things on my mind. If you have thoughts on any of these, if you have thoughts on how I can improve me just rambling for 30 minutes into the microphone, if you have thoughts on the conference ideas I mentioned or anything, you can always hit me up on Twitter, respond to the podcast, whatever. I'm probably going to commit to doing one or two more of these. And then if everyone hates it, you'll never hear from me. Well, you'll hear from me again. It just won't be hearing from only me. And if everyone loves it, you know, you'll probably hear once or so a month from me on this. But look, I had fun. I obviously enjoy talking and people might accuse me of doing this just because I enjoy listening to myself. So this was fun. Thanks for listening and I'll see you next month. A quick disclaimer, nothing on this podcast should be considered investment advice. Guests or the hosts may have positions in any of the stocks mentioned during this podcast. Please do your own work and consult a financial advisor. Thanks.